I'm going to call to order the Ways and Means Committee hearing, and Mr. Smith will note the roll. The next item on our agenda is the approval of the minutes for the March 23rd meeting.
So moved.
Representative David moves approval of the minutes for March 23rd. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are adopted. The next item on our agenda will be the amendment to the budget resolution. And members, there's a handout that we need the pages to hand out that Mr. Marks prepared for us. And what we're doing with this amendment to the targets is setting a revenue level for the Health and Human Services bill. And given the nature of that bill and an attempt by this body to limit additional revenues, we are going to add a subset of the HHS target to show the maximum revenue increase in that particular bill. And the pages are handing this out. It further explains it. As you'll see on the amendment, you can see that the net spending limit that we have in our current resolution is reflected on line 15. And the amendment will then show that the total cost to the general fund of this bill going up by an amount of $13,345,000. The numbers that are in the amendment today reflect the bill that Chair Abler is introducing to his committee. It's my understanding that they'll be taking amendments today and possibly tomorrow. I fully expect this number may change prior to hearing the bill in Ways and Means, probably sometime next week. But at this point, this is the best number that we can put in front of the committee for approval. So are there any questions? Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I wish Representative Abler were here, because I would like to know from him what he sees as the practical impact of this with his budget. It appears you're buttoning down the hatches, so to speak, in terms of the amount of revenue that they would be allowed to increase. Would this have any impact then on any of the special funds? I just want to get a feel for myself and for the committee as to what the practical impact of this is. And there must be something about a number 13,345. I mean, that seems to be a rather exacting number. And one of the problems with the budget resolution is to get a feel here for what the practical meaning of some of these numbers would be.
Right, and I understand that. And I, Chair Abler is actually chairing his own committee at this time, and they're beginning to take amendments, and he felt like he needed to stay with his committee. And so that's why he's not in our committee hearing today. I had a conversation with Mr. Walls, who's the fiscal analyst for this committee, kind of with your same question, and he said that this number is a compilation of a number of things, such as higher deductibles, co-pays, relative to the various programs that are contained in that finance committee. So it wasn't any big one number. As far as special revenue funds in your question, only to the degree that they would be transferred in to the general fund, would they affect the revenue number?
Okay, so yeah, I just wish I I would like to hear from him, but I guess that isn't possible, and I understand that we all get in that situation where we have committee meetings running at the same time. What he sees as a practical impact of that, it quite honestly almost appears as though you're maybe reining in a chair, but I don't know.
Well,
Without knowing what may or may not have been on the table, what programs may or may not have been impacted, I just wish there was more information about what the meaning of this change is.
And Representative Carlson, I can say that Chair Abler is in support of this. We've had discussion about it. He knows it's happening. He's fine with this. And again, Mr. Walls, of course, is also busy with their committee hearing at the time. But as I stated before, I fully expect that this number will change in some way, shape, or form. My understanding is they have about 50 amendments before their committee.
So, Madam Chair, would if somebody had an amendment in that committee that, for one reason or another, brought that up to, I'll just pick a number, $15 million would be about $1.7 million above, that would be out of order in that committee then?
Representative Carlson, I'm not...
They be able to, when you say adjust the budget resolution, which is what we did the other day, or yesterday I think it was, seems like the other day, the question was when the target would be implemented then. Would the bill be able to come over here and be out of balance and then would have to be adjusted with the first order of business being the budget resolution and then the adjustment? Because the reason I'm asking that question, I was rather strict on any bill that ever left finance had to be within the target before it ever came to taxes if it was being referred there and then ways and means, or before it would come to ways and means, it had to be in the target that had been set. So I think what you're saying is that they could perhaps go over and then the adjustment would be made here. Am I interpreting the process correctly?
Well,
the process question.
Right, and Representative Carlson, I can't speak for Chair Abler. I can only speak for myself. And as you saw yesterday, when Chair Davids brought his tax bill before the committee, his tax bill did not meet his target number in the first order of business. Was an amendment to make that happen. And at this point, I can't tell you whether I don't know what HHS is going to look like when it leaves committee, of course, because that hasn't happened yet. But I would suspect, knowing a little bit about Health and Human Services and how complex the issues are and the interplay between different policy issues, I would expect that when Health and Human Services comes to Ways and Means, that there may be an amendment to the revenue number, and there may also very likely be an amendment to the bill. But speculating past that is really difficult.
Madam Chair, what I was trying to figure out was whether a bill could leave Health and Human Services above the target. And I think you just said it could, but it would be adjusted.
Right.
Okay.
Are there any additional questions on the target amendment before the committee? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The targets are amended.
And Madam Chair, while we're on the resolution, could I ask another
Certainly.
Question, a follow-up to the one I had yesterday? As you know, I expressed a lot of concern about the capital investment bill, and there's a couple bills now that are being heard and in the process of moving, but it doesn't appear that there isn't any debt service in the budget resolution with the $70 million target. In fact, there's some questions in terms of what that process is going to be in terms of how cancellations may take place, which I think there may be some legal questions in terms of what I understand are the instructions to the chair. But you did indicate yesterday, and there's even more publicity now about the flooding, where 80 some inches of moisture this past winter fifth worst winter in terms of moisture accumulation in history or since they've been keeping track. And so when we brought down the 75 million for other bills to 5 million, I was concerned about that. And now with the target at 70 million, and it would appear then, or I know then that means zero available for the bonding side of any flood relief. And you indicated that somehow that would be handled, and I would like to get some feel for how that's going to be handled. And I'm asking that, quite honestly, on behalf of many communities across the state of Minnesota that are, as we speak, beginning to deal with the flooding question, whether it's the Minnesota River or the Red River and the Red River Valley or any number of other places where flooding may occur. We could have very easily a need as great as it was with our special session bill, and maybe even beyond that. And I would like some comfort level as to how you see that being accomplished. And then it's a broader question about bonding generally, but the most immediate issue before us is going to be the flood relief.
Representative Carlson, as I stated yesterday, and I think the long history of the House, the Senate, and the governor's office, no matter who has been in charge, when there's been natural disasters, we've taken care of the people of the state of Minnesota, and I fully expect that tradition to continue. I don't have details for you right now. I don't know what more you're asking at this point, but certainly we are not going to put the state in the position of not taking care of the emergency needs of its residents.
Yeah, and I worked on the special session bill with the governor and others on the House and on the Senate side, mainly with Chris DeLaForest, as we were putting that bill together. And my point, though, is that the House budget resolution doesn't leave anything to address the issue. So my question is, how are we going to address it under the House budget resolution? That's the question. Because I take it at face value, you said at some point yesterday you would like to address the issue, or you thought you would, and I'm asking, well, under the House budget resolution, which gives us our guidelines, how are we doing that?
Representative Carlson, you're just going to have to be a little patient, I think. As I stated before, there will likely be more amendments coming. We moved very rapidly in getting targets done in 10 days instead of 25 days. Move the budget process ahead of the policy process, and quite frankly, it's, you know, we're going to have to make a few adjustments here and there as we go through. But again, I'll state for you and for the residents of the state of Minnesota, if there are emergencies that require the state's involvement in order to help the citizens of the state of Minnesota, the House Republican Caucus will be there to help. Any other questions?
Well, that was my question remains, and I guess I'll accept the fact that you'll get back to us. I happen to live on the top of a hill and away from any rivers and streams, but there are folks, like I say, right now that are doing the sandbagging and so on. That's an important question. And my only question, and I'll stop at that point, was if a bill comes through, how are we going to be able to address it under the House budget resolution?
And we will.
And you will. Okay.
We will.
We'll have to see how you do it then. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Carlson. Chair Garofalo, welcome to the committee. If you'd like to move your bill.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I move House File 934 for passage and to the General Register.
All right. Thank you.
And there's a A14 amendment that I would also move, Madam Chair.
And I understand you've already been to Texas.
That is correct, Madam Chair. I have been to Texas.
Thank you. And members, just in case you're trying to get ahead of the agenda, given the fact that we just had the bill referral for the environment bill on the floor and the challenges for duplicating with all of the other big bills that are being considered in committee, we don't have the environment bill in your packets yet, but by the time we get to it, you'll have another green folder with the environment bill in your material. So Representative Garofalo moves the A14 amendment. My understanding is that you need this amendment in order to get your bill to meet your target. Is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair. And Mr. Crow can cover more of the amendment if people have questions.
All right. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and committee members, the amendment is pretty simple. The first three lines change the basic formula allowance, increasing it in fiscal 2012 and in fiscal 14 and later. Then on lines 1-4 through 14, there's a technical adjustment because of the market value credit that's in the tax bill right now. The net result of that would be less tax base in the state, which would increase the equalization aid that's paid under the K-12 bill. In order to make that change revenue neutral, this would require the Commissioner of Education to adjust the equalizing factors to account for that tax base change so that there's no additional equalization aid paid out by the Department of Education. Lines 115 to 19 change the general education appropriation to reflect the formula change. Lines 120 through 212 relate to the early childhood scholarships and that are in the early childhood education section of Article 7, and take out some of the licensing references and include a more generic term for preschool programs, and then require that the commissioner not mandate the use of any specific curriculum. And then lines 213 to and 14 amend the appropriation as part of that that change, that the formula change, the other financial changes, 213 to 14, that increase the appropriation for that program up to its the original amount in the bill as introduced. And line 215 removes a reference to the appropriation for those scholarships being available until expended, which would limit the availability of the funds to the current biennium, which is pretty typical practice for appropriations.
All right, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Groff or Mr. Crow, what is the, I'm looking at every one of these changes, at least the number changes, and they're all going up. What is the fiscal effect of this amendment?
Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, the net cost of the amendment is about $26 million, and it's accounted for on the appropriation spreadsheet that's in your packet.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I recommend that we adopt this amendment. We've gone over it, and it looks fine. It's accounted for within the bill, and it either makes improvements or it doesn't do any harm.
Representative Reinhardt.
And thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question of clarification on 2.5. The quality rating system program ratings may reflect a participating program's accreditation. I'd like to know the meaning and intent of that.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tim Strom from House Research. Madam Chair, Representative Reinert, the changes regarding the on 2.5 address the issue of the quality rating system, and essentially what the intent of that language is to allow the quality rating system, when they're looking at the quality of a program, to look at that program's other accreditation. So if that's a preschool program or a child care center that is already accredited, it allows the rating system to incorporate that accreditation as a part of its review of the program.
Representative Reinhardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Mr. Strom, this may seem innocent enough at face value, but the may reflect portion, I think, in its own right, almost demands a discussion about what is the criterion by which the program's accreditation will be incorporated. Are the QRIS measures the criterion? Is there a set of standards that will exist in statute? I'm asking this because there's been a long discussion around this issue, and I've sat in on three or four several-hour meetings, and I'm very concerned about the light brush that this issue is being given in this sentence.
Representative Garofalo?
Madam Chair and Representative Reinhardt, if you look in that section, this is in addition to the items that we discussed in the committee. So in terms of a light brush, we're not eliminating the requirements that are in there.
Representative Reinhardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This may not be the opportunity to resolve this, but it still does not. I wish that Representative Slawick were here because she might be able to engage this at a better level, but the accreditation issue is a complicated one, and there's disagreement among stakeholders on how it should be brought into play. So to say that it may reflect is pretty ambiguous at the very least.
Thank you. Any additional questions on the A14 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A14 amendment say aye.
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 Those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion passes. The A14 amendment is adopted. Members, I'm not aware of any additional amendments to the bill. Is there any additional discussion? Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garfalo, I just have a couple of questions. And one is, since I'm from Minneapolis, I'm very concerned about the immense amount of property tax increase this bill has for Minneapolis. Does the Chamber of Commerce support this bill?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, I'm not familiar with the Chamber of Commerce's position on this issue. Second of all, with regards to the issue of property taxes, I would point out that on your levy tracking sheet on a statewide basis, we have a zero levy target. And also on a personal note, you should know that with regards to funding increases contained in the bill, some schools in Minneapolis and St. Paul actually received some of the largest funding increases in this bill.
Representative Wagenius.
There are, with the repeal of special ed and putting it on the levy, and with the integration aid and alternative facilities aid, our property taxes are going to go up immensely. So my question is, you have some of your major businesses in the state of Minnesota in Minneapolis, and I want to know if the Chamber of Commerce is supporting this bill.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, as I said, I am not familiar with the Chamber of Commerce's position on this bill. I have not received a letter stating whether they support it or oppose it.
Representative Wagenius.
I would think it would be helpful if we knew if our major business community was supporting these tax increases. But let me put it a different way then. One of our major corporations is Target Corporations. Does Target Corporations support this bill? They're very interested in education funding, and of course, they have a huge presence in Minneapolis. Do they support this bill?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, again, I am not familiar with the Target Corporation's position on this bill.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Don't you think it would be helpful for us to know how our corporate community feels about this major change in funding that will have an impact on them?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Wagenius, I think with regards to the major funding you're referring to, I think you're discussing the modifications of the Alternative Facilities Program, which transitions it from aid to levy. Within the confines of an $14.1 billion budget, that is an $11 million change. And my expectation is that the Chamber of Commerce, as well as Target and other organizations, are going to continue to examine this bill, look at it through its process, and by the time it reaches the House floor, we'll find some idea what their position is on this bill and other pieces of legislation.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo. I think it's extremely important to understand how the business community is going to feel about this bill. On a whole another subject, Madam Chair, may I ask another question?
Certainly. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. And I'm looking through the bill and looking at the grounds for discharging teachers. And, of course, we all want them to be super effective. But one of the issues that I worry about a lot, because I want children to have a really great science education, I'm a huge advocate of a great science education. But there are communities where school boards don't want evolution taught. They don't want climate change taught. It seems to me that we are opening the gate to push out teachers or not attract the best science teachers because they don't want to fight they have no protections against a school board that might want to lay them off. How do you address that issue of not protecting science teachers?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative McGinnis, I think you're referring to the teacher effectiveness article of the bill. Is that
I am.
Where you're at? Okay. In terms of a financial discussion on that, I have no answer, no items to your questions. I'm happy to have Representative Peterson, who is the author of that bill, come down and discuss what protections are available in there and what the changes are that we are making and making in statute. Would that be acceptable to you?
Absolutely.
Representative Peterson, come on.
No, and members of, you know, Representative Peterson, certainly a brief answer, but we try and concentrate on the fiscal components of the bill in front of us. So, Representative Wagenius, would you restate your question?
I'd be glad to.
Thank you.
I think, as a general proposition, we want the best science teachers for our students that we can get. There is pressure on science teachers in some areas not to teach evolution and not to teach science, the science of climate change. How are those teachers going to be protected given the new language in this bill?
Representative Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wagenius, I'm not sure that that's relevant to the aspects included in the bill whatsoever, their position on climate change or anything else for that matter.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I think we know that there's been a history of teachers who have taught evolution, teachers now who will want to teach climate change because that's part of basic science. But there are communities and school board members that don't want those things taught. I mean, that's real world. So dealing with that real world issue and our wanting good science teachers, seems to me that what you have done is weaken the protections for those teachers, because these are going to be subtle pushes to get rid of a teacher because they're ineffective, when the real reason is they're teaching things that a school board member doesn't wants children to hear. Could that happen?
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, the effectiveness ratings in the bill are not in any way affected by the subject matter of the course or the positions that the teacher has. So, and as far as due process goes, the teachers have all of the same due process rights that they've had before. So, that's not a possibility.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Wagenius talked about the property tax impacts for Minneapolis, but I wanted to ask you, given your earlier comment that you found some schools would get an increase in my city, do you have a sense, Representative Garofalo, what the average revenue impact per pupil is in Minneapolis, and how does that compare to the per pupil impact of this bill statewide?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Hornstein, there's a couple moving parts in this, one of which is the opportunity for the low-performing school scholarships options. So those students who are in a school that's not meeting standards that are able to transition to the school of their choice, that's an impact that takes place. But in terms of, I think what you're asking me to do is aggregate all the charter schools that are receiving an increase in Minneapolis and St. Paul, lump them in with the Minneapolis and St. Paul schools together, and then say what is the net effect of the effect on each AADM, and I do not have that number, Representative Hornstein.
Representative Hornstein.
I was going to say,
I'm sorry,
To ask House staff to try to get that number for us and get it to you at a later time.
Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo. I think that would be helpful, because I think what we have is a significant negative impact per pupil on the public system as it is now, and I think there is a transfer of some of that money to the voucher system. So it would be really helpful, because I think we're talking about several hundred dollars at least per pupil, and it would be good to get that exact figure, because I think that will have a devastating impact on public schools in my district. So if we could get that, Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, that would be most appreciated.
Thank you. Representative Biskens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, following up on Representative Wagenius's questions, the ag industry is big in the state of Minnesota. Can you tell me how the Farm Bureau feels about this bill?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskens, I would refer you to my earlier answer. I'm not familiar with the Farm Bureau's position on this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, how about the Isaac Walton League? Have they weighed in?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskens, once again, I would refer you to my same answer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, well, I guess if I want to know that, I can ask them myself, so I'm not going to ask you to get it, nor am I going to ask you to find out the per pupil impacts, because if I need to know that, we have staff who can figure that out for me also. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Biskens. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've gone through this with a fine-tooth comb in education, so I'll limit my comments here. But I definitely will recommend a no vote on this bill. And in addition to the property tax issues, even though there is a zero levy target, there's certainly local property tax implications. We always have to remember the levy target we're talking about here is state taxes. But with the freezing of special education, and any time you freeze a formula, that's a cut if it's a formula that's going up, and certainly special ed is going up by leaps and bounds, $100 million alone in the next 2 years. Without this, it certainly impacts either cuts at the local level or property tax increases or both. But for today, I want to say that my whole time at the legislature, I've tried to work on need-based formulas. The governor has a work group starting next Wednesday that will be looking at the whole reform of the education finance formula, and for my role on there, I'll be pushing for need-based formulas. But this particular bill goes in the opposite direction. It's freezing compensatory, which is a cut. No matter what Representative Garofalo might want to say and said in the committee, when you freeze a formula, it's a cut. Special education, as I said, adult basic education is growing. We have a lot of immigrants coming into many of our districts, including my own. So when you have waiting lists, then that is certainly a cut. And then integration aid, while it's changed into innovation revenue and financially shows up for most districts in another form, it's certainly not going to be addressing integration anymore when the rule itself is repealed in this bill. So we'll only be looking at other uses for the money. But then for the cities of the first class, it's a huge funding cliff that they go over cold turkey in this bill. So that's going in the opposite direction of funding for need. Just the last, and so I would hope that as we go along, we talk about it with the governor, we talk about it with the finance working group that both Representative Garofalo and I and others will be on, that we can come to something besides what we have in this bill for changes in finance. Certainly integration revenue does need to be reformed, but not this way and not this rapidly. There's a lot of policy in the bill that I object to, but this is the Ways and Means Committee's, but I'll just highlight a couple. One, the vouchers I think are very, very detrimental to the health of public schools. And then just in general, the anti-teacher legislation that's here, including bargaining, but not just that, also all the other anti-teacher legislation in the name of evaluation and accountability. But I just read an email, members, from that was written by Linda Darling Hammond, and she was pointing, it was an international conference, on teachers. And she was talking about, they weren't talking about getting rid of the bargaining rights. They weren't talking about so much evaluation based only on testing. In fact, teachers internationally have very high salaries that are competitive with other professions, unlike our country. And so all the things they were taught, teachers have prep time. They have ways to be professional. And by the way, countries like Finland, of course, we always point to as having their students doing very well. So this bill takes a turn away from need-based funding and professional teachers who can best have our students learning. So I strongly recommend a no vote.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Representative Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It appears that Representative Greiling took the words right out of my mouth as it pertains to some of the issues or concerns that were raised. And so I'll just say that I have some concern about the reduction in integration revenue and how that impacts my district and the city of Minneapolis, even though I will agree that we should be looking at that issue much more holistically and how we can think about equity and fairness, but also the true intent of what integration revenue was intended to do. I also have some concerns about eliminating special education inflation factors. I just really hope that as we look at this as we look at this bill, that we look at its impact on all children and not just some children. And if we really are seeking to do any reform, that is done in a real comprehensive and responsible way. But I thank you for your efforts, but I will be voting no on today's bill, unfortunately.
Thank you, Representative Champion. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, has a roll call been requested?
There has not been a roll call requested.
I'd like to request a roll call. And,
a roll call has been requested.
And, Madam Chair, just a couple of comments, and other folks have indicated much of what I would have to say as well. But I would like to emphasize a couple of things on the fiscal side. One is that for some school districts, there is a property tax impact. And I happen to represent one of those school districts, the Robbinsdale schools. And a question that I did have when we start talking about specific school districts, I know that the Robbinsdale schools overall net, I think, lose about $25 per pupil the first year, and something like $11 or $12 the second year, so the net is down as well. I think that most of the discussion has been on our largest school districts, or larger ones. I guess Anoka being the largest, but Minneapolis and St. Paul. But want to point out that there are some negative impacts fiscally on other school districts in this bill as well. And I was wondering, Representative Garofalo, if you have handy, or if staff has handy, if you could share with us the list of those school districts that were provided to us last night in the tax committee that would have a property tax increase. And then the other question I have often when we've gone through the process, and going back to when I was referencing the school district, or one of the two that I represent, we've often had printouts available so that the members of the various committees could see what the bottom line impact was on their school district. And will those printouts be available anytime soon so we know what the impact will be as the bill goes forward? And then I have a couple of other comments or questions.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, the alternative facilities, the there's 23 districts statewide that qualify for this extra program. Of those 23, my recollection is that 7 of them currently receive aid outside the debt service equalization formula that the rest of the state has to use. And, oh, there they are. The 7 districts are Minneapolis, Anoka, Hennepin, Bloomington, Robbinsdale, Rochester, St. Paul, and Duluth. Those are the 7 districts. But, again, the program that everybody else gets to use in the state in terms of determining state assistance, the debt service equalization program, not by any change in statute that we're making, but forecast appropriations, those dollars are going up. And I don't believe any of these 7 districts would qualify for debt service equalization. But those that appropriation is, that forecast appropriation is outstanding and no modifications are being made to that.
And Madam,
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, in addition to simply being seven school districts, there are large school districts that would have quite a number of students, if you look at it from the student number standpoint. But I've been monitoring closely as a member of the tax committee and a member of this committee. You know, we had the tax bill that went through and their major property tax increases in that bill potentially, and wanted to make sure everybody understood that at least for some school districts, their property tax increases in this bill as well. Representative Grafflo, the other part of that first question was when will additional information be available about the impact on the school districts? And maybe that's the staff question, they're the ones that put it together.
Yeah, Madam
Representative Grafflo.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative, did you mean, you're talking about the runs, right?
That's right.
I think they're in your folder.
I didn't see them here. Are they in the folder, Madam Chair, do you know? There was information here, but I didn't see the runs. They weren't available last night in those folders either, but you've got them? Okay, maybe I missed them, but the answer is they're now available. I guess that was what I was asking, was when they would be available. I see he's got two, it looks like, so maybe that's the... maybe he's got mine. Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Representative Carlson, I guess they were just sent to us at 12:30, so I don't know that they're actually in the packets, but certainly we can get pages.
Okay, well, I...
Some people have them. Maybe you and I just were left out.
Representative Anderson had two, so I've got one now.
All right.
So,
members, if any of you need copies, let the page know, and we'll make sure we get them for you.
And
Representative Grafflo.
And Representative Carlson, there are separate runs for you for fiscal year 12 and fiscal year 13. Just so
maybe that's why it appeared that he had two. He probably had one for each year.
Yep.
Okay. I'll give it back. I'll wait until I get both yours then. I was just soliciting the information. I can look at that later, Madam Chair. Representative Grafflo. Representative Grafflo,
Representative
here I've got
Carlson.
It now. The other question that I'm interested in, and I mentioned yesterday, and I think as the various bills come through, is an important one. And what are the tails in this particular bill?
Representative Grafflo.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, on your spreadsheet, you will see that in fiscal year 14 specifically, there's a negative number there. That's because that the committee thought it was very important to pay back the shift as soon as possible. Under the governor's proposal, that payback was phased in at a 2% rate over the next 10 years, over the next decade. The committee felt very strongly that the shift should be paid back as soon as possible. So it assumes payback at the end of fiscal year 13, beginning of fiscal year 14.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Is that okay?
I was looking for a number. I personally concur that when we put a shift in place, it has to be paid back. Don't disagree with that that at all. The school districts are anticipating that payment, but it still is a tail, and I was wondering what the future obligation is, what the tail is in the bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative Grafflo.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, line 252 of your spreadsheet on page 5 will show a number of $1,433,926,000.
Okay, so roughly...
Representative Carlson.
Roughly a tail of $1.4 billion. Are there any other... that's the shift. And are there any other tails in the bill?
Representative Grafflo.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, that's the total.
That's the total. Okay. So,
additional questions,
billion.
Representative Carlson?
I think, Madam Chair, at least at this point in time, I did want to make a comment.
Certainly.
My good friend to the right, and that's probably meaning in two ways, sitting to my right and philosophically. You know, when the reference was made to whether various organizations have taken a position on the education bill, when the reference was made by another member earlier about the business community, I think we all know that the business community, whether it's the business partnership or the Chamber of Commerce, has been very engaged in education issues. I don't know if the others have that were referenced earlier or not, but I think we all know that on a variety of issues, the business community has taken positions, and I thought that that was a very legitimate question or concern, what the position of the business community would be on this bill.
Representative Hamilton.
Madam Chair, I just had an observation. I'll save it for later. Thank you.
Representative Hornstein, did you bow out of the list, or you? Representative Hornstein.
I'm fine, Madam Chair. We can move on.
All right, thank you. Representative Viskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to my colleague and friend to my left, the point I was trying to make was simply that if I am concerned about what organizations think about the bill, I can ask them. I don't need to be badgering the author of the bill.
All right, members, are there any additional questions? Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since that remark was obviously directed at me, I feel like I need to respond. I was not intending to badger Representative Garofalo at all. The business community.
Sure, can I get in on this?
Representative Rukavina, no. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, our business community, at least in Minneapolis, has been very concerned about our educational system and very concerned about our property taxes. I didn't mean to badger you. If that is the way you took it, I really think that our business community is engaged in these issues. I would like to hear their opinion about these bills, because they have said that education and property taxes affect them dramatically, and I just wanted to know how they felt about your bill.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Are there any additional questions? I do have some of my members that would like to be here for a roll call vote, and so what I'd like to do at this point, if there's no other questions, I'm sorry, Representative Breinhardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question, Representative Garofalo, will be about innovation revenue, but before I ask you my question, I just want to make a preliminary comment. There have been a few remarks made in this direction, but and from my point of view, one of the most egregious actions in this bill isn't the reduction in integration revenue, it's the repeal of the integration rule. Now what it used to be called integration aid is going to be called innovation aid or revenue. And from my perspective, that's an action that in some regard was done in the dark of night. We did never had a hearing on that issue. We had a hearing on integration aid, but not the repeal of the rule. And I think the magnitude of the impact on our entire state is of such a... is so great that there's truly a violation of the spirit, I think, of how we approach diversity in the state. But that being said, recognizing that integration revenue has now become innovation revenue, what mechanisms of oversight are in place for innovation revenue, and what type of accountability is in place?
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Breinhardt, first of all, I would ask you and members of the committee to look at page 44, lines 19 and 20 of the bill with regards to innovation. And it's and members don't need to look it up. I can read it to you really quick. It says, innovation revenue received under this section must be spent on research-based activities designed to close the achievement gap. Period. That is what is being used for. One of the criticisms, one of the many criticisms of the current formula, including those from the Office of the Legislative Auditor, is that it was poorly designed. It was poorly written. Outside of the disparities in funding and how they were allocated, how districts qualified for it, how it was being used, we had districts in this state spending $125,000 on a cultural liaison officer. We had districts in this state spending $99,000 on an integration program coordinator. $57,000 on a secretary for the integration program coordinator. Now, that sort of spending, that might be good for the adults, and it might take care of the adults. It's not doing anything for the kids. So what we've done what we've done with these changes, is we have put a laser focus on what this revenue is supposed to be used for. This revenue is to be spent on research-based activities designed to close the achievement gap. Period. End of discussion. In terms of oversight, we did not set up another task force. We did not set up a more review. But I will tell you that this legislature, when this becomes law, this legislature next session will be watching how districts are using this these dollars very closely. And we don't need a task force report. We don't need any off-summer meetings. We're going to ask them to we're going to call them up. We're going to have them come down. We're going to talk to parents. We're going to talk to leaders in the community, and we're going to see how those dollars are being used. But I think it is very clear that the current program is busted. And I respect the fact that even members on a bipartisan basis across all geography of the state of Minnesota have said the program's busted in terms of its disbursement and what it's being used for. If people don't like my idea, I would invite people to propose legislation to offer amendments on the House floor saying a better use of these dollars. Because I think actually spending it on the kids, resolving the achievement gap, that's what the money should be used for. That's my opinion.
Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I certainly didn't intend to provoke the level of rhetoric you just engaged in, Representative Garofalo.
I love you.
I would challenge you on whether or not integration revenue in the past has been used to address or not address the achievement gap. There's certainly plenty of testimony in the direction that it has. Has all of it? No. Have we heard testimony that the system needs fixing? There's others around here who could speak better to that than I could. But we did hear testimony that prior to this session, many people engaged very aggressively on a proposal to fix the broken system. So why we never fully engaged those professionals in that hearing, in a hearing, we gave them 5 minutes time. Well, they had a lot of on-the-ground experience, the kind of testimony you talk about that the legislators will bring people to the table is a relatively mushy accountability system as far as I can see. I mean, you can say that it's all going to be targeted at student achievement, but how those dollars integrate to our other efforts in accountability is simply not delineated in this bill. And I would say integration revenue had a better oversight system than you have in place here for your proposed innovation revenue.
Madam Chair?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, my friend, Representative Reinhart, the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report came out in 2005. 6 years ago, we were told that there was a problem with this. In terms of being mushy, I think the legislature's response of not solving that problem, that's what I think is mushy.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Reinhart more than covered a lot of what I was going to say, but Representative Garofalo, your answer to Representative Reinhart's question of what kind of oversight there's going to be, the answer I heard you say, I think, was not any, other than we're all going to be watching it, which is kind of what we have been doing, and then we have these kind of results. The Office of the Legislative Auditor, you know, we've had working groups and task forces working on improving this, and this was the year, had I still been the chair, when we were going to finally finish it. And your solution now is just to get rid of it all and to get rid of the rule. The auditor never said get rid of the rule. The auditor said fix the funding and make it clear what it's for. And you have clarified that it is not for integration. I question whether that isn't going to take us back into the courts and we'll have funding spent on lawyers again. I think it's a very foolhardy move without hearings on the actual topic of getting rid of integration revenue. We didn't ever talk about that. That just sprung up in this bill. Again, I hope that we can manage to get this out of the bill as the conference committee and the process goes forward in favor of discussing this topic based on the auditor's recommendations and the recommendations from the integration work group that we got in January. And I sure would have loved to have had a hearing or two on those, too, rather than the 5 minutes. But I think in the finance working group, we will have a chance to look at them. And we agree there are serious problems with how the money is being spent. But I would like the money to be spent on integration. And we have compensatory for the opportunity gap, and this innovation revenue is redundant with that.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, and to my friend, Representative Greiling, we've spent over $1 billion on this program since it was created, and our schools are more segregated than when it started.
right. Representative Champion.
So perhaps, thanks, Madam Chair. Perhaps, Representative Garofalo, that you could tell me how what you propose is going to desegregate our schools.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Champion, first of all, the focus that we have in the education bill is on helping the kids. That's the emphasis. That's why 44.19, 44.20, that's what the focus on. We want kids to learn. But fundamentally, I have to tell you that some of the best schools in Minneapolis and St. Paul, okay, charter schools, have overwhelmingly high minority populations, overwhelmingly free and reduced lunch counts, and they're getting some of the best results. They're getting higher MCA scores than some of the suburban districts. And it's a careful topic. I want to make sure that we approach it in a thoughtful and reasonable way, but in no way, shape, or form am I seeking for us to go backwards. I'm looking for us to go forward with academic achievement. But I will say that the opportunity scholarships provisions in this bill for those kids who are in schools where there are poor performing results, it is empowering the parents. It is empowering the kids to have them choose the school they want to go to. So that would be my answer to you, Representative Champion. But I would hope that my friend would not think that I am trying to take Minnesota backwards, because I'm not.
Madam Chair, follow-up.
Representative Champion.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. I appreciate your answer. The only piece of this that I would hope that we would think about in real time, I think that there are two objectives. One is to make sure that academically we are making sure we are giving our kids what they need to. But there's another socialization question here, which is around diversifying our classrooms and diversifying it so that we can get to know other people, that we can socialize with others. Because, hey, I definitely believe that we must work intentionally around closing the achievement gap. But I also think that the other ancillary issues are equally important, because they need to make sure that outside of the bounds of that classroom, that they are respected, their humanity is seen and appreciated. And so the only reason why I spoke into the issue is once you made the statement about integration, because integration has a place or space that we need to think realistically about and intentionally about, and not have what I call unintended consequences of policy that looks neutral on its face but has desperate impact.
Representative Garofalo, any concluding comments? Is there anybody? Representative Greiling, I don't know if you're still on my list or we forgot
Madam
to cross
Chair,
you off.
You forgot to cross me off. I had
All
my
right.
turn. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or concerns? Representative Carlson.
A quick comment, because I had asked about the printouts and the numbers that I used earlier as an example of the Robbinsdale School District. Actually, we're improved under the most recent printout, but we're still in the negative. But when I said 25 and 11, apparently that was a printout as the bill left the division. And the amendment that went on is reflected in these printouts. So this, then, am I correct, is the most recent available information.
Madam Chair,
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I look forward to your support for the bill now that I've addressed your concerns. Thank you.
No, I'm still in the negative. Thank you.
All right, members, what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to lay House File 934 on the table. I'm going to ask that the pages go get the members for the roll call vote. In the meantime, we will take up Representative Erickson's bill, which is contained in House File 934, and hopefully take care of that as well. So, Paiges, if you want to try and herd the cats, we'd appreciate that. Good luck. Representative Erickson, welcome to the committee. I would be happy to move Senate File Number 56 for consideration by the Ways and Means Committee. And members, as was discussed on the House floor, our intent here today is to move in the language of Representative Erickson's bill, House File 511. That is also in your packets, but there is a DE1 amendment to Senate File 56, and that is the document that I would like to move to the Senate File 56. And the DE1, as I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is House File 511, the third engrossment, of which there was then an oral amendment in committee. So the DE1 should reflect the most recent version of House File 511. Representative Erickson, is that correct?
Madam Chair of Committee, that is correct.
All right, so members, in order to get the bill in the shape that Representative Erickson would like to discuss it, I'd like to move the DE1 amendment to Senate File 56. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion passes. The amendment is adopted. Representative Erickson, if you'll briefly explain your bill and, again, the funding and language for this revision, or this bill as amended now, is contained in Representative Garofalo's bill.
That is correct, Madam Chair. At the beginning of this session, I reviewed about 100 proposals of mandate relief that came from school boards and superintendents across the state. And this proposal now contains 9 of the top 12 that were determined to be priority. Here in Ways and Means, I would like you to consider Section 6, 7, 8, and 9. So beginning with Section 6, there is a repeal of the set-aside, the $3 maintenance of effort per adjusted marginal cost pupil in the Safe Schools Levy. In Section 7, there is a two-year, a temporary suspension of the 2% set-aside for staff development. In Section 8 is the ability for school boards to transfer funds that are not already designated, except in community education and the food service. And the Section 9 repealer is a repeal of the January 15th deadline and its penalty. So, Madam Chair, those are the sections of the bill appropriate for this committee.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions? As we're kind of doing what we did with the Green Acres yesterday. If not, all those in favor of Senate File 56 as amended say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion passes. The bill is passed as amended to the General Register.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And members, I think at this time we're close, and I'll take House File 934 off the table. I'm assuming all discussion has happened, and we'll have Mr. Smith take the roll. So Representative Garofalo renews his motion that House File 934, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the House floor.
Representative Holberg.
Yes.
Representative Downey.
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Abler. Representative Bruce Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Sarah Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Beard.
Aye.
Representative Breinart.
No.
Representative Biskins.
No.
Representative Champion.
No.
Representative Davids.
Yes.
Representative Eakin.
No.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Hackbarth.
No.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Howes.
Yes.
Representative Huntley. Representative Kahn.
No.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yes.
Representative Lanning.
Yes.
Representative Lincheski. Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Representative Nornes.
Yes.
Representative Pulowski.
No.
Representative Rukavina.
No.
Representative Slawick. Representative Smith. Representative Wagenius. Representative Westrom.
Aye.
The motion passes 15-11. The bill is approved and recommended to move to the House floor. Thank you, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The next item on our agenda is House File 1101, Representative Nornes, and I would appreciate a report from the pages on the status of the printing and distribution of the environment bill.
You said 5 minutes.
Thank you. Representative Nornes. welcome to the committee. Does your bill that's, I don't see any amendments to your bill, so does your bill that's in front of us meet the target that you were given by the Ways and Means Committee?
Madam Chair, I can assure you the targets have been met, and I think Mr. Berg could confirm we've got $1,000 on the table.
That's rare around here. Congratulations. Representative Nornes, if you'd like to briefly go over your bill and then stand for questions, we'd appreciate it.
Okay, I assume you just want to talk about the money.
That would be correct. Yeah.
Okay, the target for this committee is $2.5 billion for the 2012-2013 biennium. And to reach that, we were required to reduce the general fund spending by 10.9% from the previous biennium. And that totals $411 million. That's between the Minsku and University of Minnesota. Office of Higher Education is cut by 15.4%, and the total appropriation there's 34.5% for the state grant program, which fully funds the grant program. And that's one of the things that we can point to as being positive in our bill. There are some tuition increases, but that perhaps is not something that you may or may want to talk about. Both systems have some caps on tuition. The four-year state university is 4%, two-year college is 2%, and the university is approximately 5%.
Thank you. Representative Nornes.
Take questions.
Are there any questions of Representative Nornes? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, the point that he was making about the state grant program, and let me point out, I have had a long history with that. In fact, much of what the way the state grant program is currently structured was legislation that I authored years ago. The problem, as I see it, and I'm going to have a question of either you or staff, is that we're dealing with a negative number. So when you fully funded the state grant program, it would appear to me then that you had to further reduce the appropriations to the University of Minnesota and to the Minsku system to come up with the dollars to move into the state grant program. And if I might ask either of you then, the private proprietaries, the for-profit schools, benefit and have been at least in some biennium a growing part of the financial aid program. And we've allowed them to participate, but they're not under the same financial pressures that the public colleges and universities would be under with the reductions in the bill. And so I would like you to comment on the philosophy behind that. I could even give a good news, bad news story. You know, your tuition is going up at the university, and that would be the bad news, and the good news is that you're helping to send your neighbor to one of the private proprietaries or for-profits. Your philosophy behind that, I think, would be important to note, being that they're not being cut. You know, their tuition levels are either going to be constant, I assume. We're not in an inflationary period. So could we not argue that they're perhaps getting a windfall at this difficult time?
Madam Chair, Representative Nornes.
I should have also mentioned before we get to that answer that the work-study program and the child care grants also originally we were looking at cuts, and they are also back to the funding level as they have been in the past.
Madam Chair, it's an initiative that I've supported. My problem with when you say that was such a good thing is that we're dealing with a negative number, so we're cutting our two large public systems more than necessary to fund the financial aid that goes to the private proprietaries.
Madam Chair,
Representative Nornes,
there was a recalculation within the Office of Higher Education based on expectation of students and enrollment and so forth that accounted for some of that money that went back into the state grant program. So, as I understand it, Mr. Berg, would you like to elaborate a little bit more?
Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, I'm Doug Berg from the fiscal staff. to answer the first part of Representative Carlson's question, yes, the state grant program is increased by $27 million to cover expected demand at the anticipated tuition levels that are in the bill. The agency as a whole goes up $17 million. There are some cuts at the agency, so your supposition that the difference there, that $17 million, is coming from reductions at the system is correct. So $17 million of the $27 million that goes into the grant program would be coming from other cuts in the bill. The other portion of it I would comment on is the proprietary's tuition is almost in every case above the existing cap. So their tuition increases actually won't be a factor in their growth in the program. The program was anticipated to have more need than it had money in it and would have been prorated. Now they're, under this bill, is anticipated to be 100% of the funding necessary. So proprietary students would not have their grants prorated, nor would any other students in the grant program under the bill as it sits before you.
Well, that answers my question. Then $17 million goes in, and I'm not sure what their percentage of the pie is currently, but as Mr. Berg pointed out, and as I understand then, and that was my reference to, you know, inflation is relatively flat, so I would assume that they wouldn't have a need to raise their tuition any further. What, for my information, you know, they've kind of jumped around 9% of the financial aid pie at one point, and then I think they were 12 or 13. What's the current status of how much financial aid is going to the for-profits?
Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I don't know the percentage of that off the top of my head, and I'm not sure if Ms. Novak would have it. I would have to look that up.
I can wait later than Madam Chair if you don't have it readily available.
Madam Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I think that figure is about 40% going to the privates, both publics and the privates for-profit and not-for-profit, and about 60 to the Minsky and University system, with a very disproportionate amount when you consider the number of students served by the Minsky system in particular compared to, you know, the privates.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I was trying to factor out the I know that's the general rule in terms of the mixture public-private, but I was trying to factor out the for-profits because that's been a growing sector within the financial aid, I think. And I guess the nod is yes, that they have been. And my concern was that as money has moved over, we're cutting our publics to funnel financial aid dollars into the private proprietaries when I'm assuming their tuition should be relatively flat due to the fact that there's little inflation. But thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nornes.
I just wanted to add one thing to comments that Representative Carlson made. Our state grant program, thanks to you, is probably one of the best in the surrounding states. So we're proud of that. That's probably the only thing that we can really point to that's really positive here as we go through you know, this bill.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Madam Chair, my only concern at this point in time is we're dealing with a negative time, is we're dealing with a negative number. If we were dealing with a positive number, we wouldn't even be having the conversation, I don't think. But that's the problem when you reduce the base of our systems, and that's the issue I was trying to bring forward. Thank you.
Representative Rukavina.
Well,
now's your turn.
Thanks, Madam Chair. You're so kind. You know, Representative Nornes, I don't envy you. It seems that anytime we get in really tough times, the first thing we go after is the higher education budget. You know, members, this is the largest cut to higher education in the history of the state. And in fact, you know, the numbers that we see here on the spreadsheet do not include the stimulus money, which disappeared, which funded the university and the Minsky system over the last biennium. from the federal government, and I believe, Mr. Berg, if I'm not mistaken, if you plug those numbers in, we're talking close to a 19% cut, 18.8, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, I'm glad, Representative Norris, that you talked to the Office of Higher Education and kept and filled the gap that, incidentally, members, I tried to fill last year, if you recall. Representative Carlson, you tried to help me when Governor Pawlenty, then Governor Pawlenty, kept ignoring the fact that there was that $43 million gap in the state grant program, and we couldn't get the money then. We tried several ways to do it, and now you funded it, Representative Norris, but you took an equal amount of money from away from the two public higher education systems to fill that gap, and so you brought down their money, and, you know, again, that ratio of where that money goes is 60-40, and not in a fair prorated way, I might add. But there are a lot of other things in this bill that are puzzling to me. You know, I mean, it's a lot less, about a $250 million less than what the governor said he would have done to the higher education bill. So I don't think the governor's too happy about it. But, you know, if members, if you look on page, let's see here, where is it? Page 7. And, you know, Representative Norris did try to allow the, Representative Norris, if you would could respond, you tried to allow a, was it the 50 or 60%? Charge back to what they were cut, or 30%? I can't remember exactly your numbers. Can you answer that question?
Representative Norris.
Representative Rukavina, I believe the calculation may be 1/3.
So you're cutting them, Madam Chair, cutting them heavy, allowing them to charge back a third of what you've cut them. In the case of the university, members, if you look at on page... I believe, let me find it here. There was a peculiar formula on page 10 where those numbers on lines 10.13 to 10.15 at one time where it was a $76 million number, and the university told us that that number would not have allowed them to charge anybody for foreign students or out-of-state students the way it was written. So we changed it to this formula, which is intended to be a 5% limit of 5%, up to 5% each year for Minnesota resident students. It's 5 and 5 then with that $17.7 million. And so, Representative Norris, you went along with that. And my question is, if the university can charge back 5 and 5, why can't the Minsky system, when it built its whole base on the assumption that because the Board of Regents had in the past allowed 5 and 5, that's what they built their base on, knowing what they would be cut. They had different scenarios, and now they are being hammered so bad in this bill, members, that some of the cuts are absolutely unsustainable. I've got some figures here for if I can find it, Madam Chair. Excuse me for a minute.
Representative Rukavina, I thought you always kept those important papers in your pocket.
That's the problem. I didn't keep this one. And it was folded, too. Look at it. It was in my pocket at one time. But I took it out. That's the problem. I could reach in my pocket. I'm looking at the Northeast Higher Education District members of cuts at $1,500 less a student than last year. And if you do that prorated in the Northeast Higher Education System, up in Rainy River, 110 miles in any direction from the next closest higher education institution in this state, and their cuts, they only have 310 students, and their cuts are going to be $2,300. You can't, that's impossible. If the goal here is to shut down, and I don't know why you went 2% and 4% in the Minsky system, giving the Winonas and the Bemidji's and the St. Clouds the opportunity to charge back 4% each year, but only 2% at the... If your goal was to shut some of them down, I wish you would have the intestinal fortitude to come forward with a bill that says, shut down Rainy River, shut down Granite Falls, shut down wherever else you want to shut down, but shut them down, because with these numbers, you're going to shut them down anyway, Representative Norris. So what was the rationale behind 5 and 5 for the university and only 2% for many of us in this room who have a community colleges, including my good friend Representative Westrum, who I know is probably as concerned as I am about Alexandria. Madam, what's the rationale?
Madam Chair.
Representative Nornes.
Representative Rukavina. The rationale is pretty simple. Our two-year college tuition is the highest, and I can give you numbers if you'd like them. I think we're highest. The next highest would be Wisconsin for a two-year school already. So that's why we said 2% is what we would like to have, so we don't get higher and higher and completely out of whack. And the 4% was for the state university system, where that was not the case, and they were in probably a little more, still at the high end of the tuition, but not out of whack as much as our two-year schools have been. That was the rationale behind it. Now, we're in discussions with Minsky. We're early into this process, where we wind up, I don't know, but right now we're at 2-4.
Well, Madam Chair, if I could, Representative Gunn, or Representative Nornes, then using that rationale, where is the University of Minnesota in tuition, let's say, in the Big Ten?
I don't know if I have numbers for the Big Ten, and I think I've got university numbers here someplace. Let's see. Okay, the University of Minnesota right now in 2010 and 11 is $12,203. I've got to go to the University of Illinois to find tuition higher. They're $13,000 in Champlain, Illinois. So the university is up there.
So then that's my point.
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, Representative Norris, why didn't you use that rationale if that's your rationale?
As
for the university.
Representative
Nornes.
As you know, we have very little control over the university. This 5%, I mean, they can still pick a number higher than that if they choose, because we don't have the authority to say they can't. So at this point, we're being a little reasonable and saying, well, maybe 5 is reasonable if they think they can make a go of it at that level. We trust them. And that's what it is right now. We just trust them to hold it to no more than that. And as I understand it, the Minsky, going back to Minsky, their board of trustees will make the final decision on how their money is allocated. And if they want to close a campus, I guess they could do that. But I'm sure that they'll do all they can to support your campus up there that you're referencing that doesn't have the capacity to survive otherwise.
Well.
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Nornes and Madam Chair, but members, the numbers here and the cuts per student are huge, whether it's a 4% tuition allowance at the universities or the 2% at the two-year institutions. Cuts of, $1,400 at Northwest Technical and cuts of almost $1,400 at St. Cloud and cuts of $1,230 at Bemidji. Per student I'm talking, members. Members, anytime the state has really leaped ahead in job growth and in economic development and improving our economy, we have invested in education. And this is the wrong way to go. And, I'm just going to say, Representative Nornes, what's really kind of puzzling to me and gets my goat is the mandates that you were so concerned about in committee. And the only mandates and repealers in this bill are the mandates that I put in law that talk about trying to buy things made in the USA. And in fact, there's one repealer in this bill. I wish Representative Hoppe were here, because it deals with cities and counties, and I don't even think it has any jurisdiction in this bill at all towards the end when we look at the repealers. If you go, there's three things repealed in the bill, members. An American-made clothing and college bookstores were, to the extent possible, I had asked them a few years to put American-made things in their bookstore. Then there's a matching grant program where we tried to for putting aside money for low-income and middle-income families. And finally, you repealed 181.986 for safety equipment and that for public employees and uniforms. And I don't think it should be in this bill, but I've heard is jobs, 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 let's cut corporate income tax, create jobs, let's do this to create jobs. And when you try to put jobs in the American worker and have a little provision in there for American workers and try to keep jobs in America, I'm proudly wearing my unite here suit here, and of course you don't all need to be told that I've got my USA made in and the Union made in America underwear on today too, Madam Chair. And you know, and to see this,
Representative Rukavina, we wouldn't expect anything less.
And to see, you know, that with pages and pages of mandates, look at this in law, pages and pages of mandates to the University of Minsk U system, the biggest mandates we're worried about are whether or not uniforms and safety equipment should be made in the USA, and whether we should make a T-shirt or try to find a T-shirt to give a kid an opportunity to buy one made by an American worker. It's sad, members. So with that, I hope the members, at least on my side, and some of the members on the other side, vote no on the bill. Representative Nornis, again, it's not your fault. You're a good guy. Right. You could have been a little better, though, on this bill and fought a little harder for a better target, because kids are going to get really hurt. Students are going to get hurt.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nornis.
Representative Rukavina, three things. My little two-year college in Fergus Falls has said they need a 3% tuition increase. Yeah, that's all I'll say on that.
Well, you don't let them in this bill.
I know. We're talking, though. And I will continue to talk.
Go ahead.
My tie is made in the United States. Made in America, it says right there.
Can I see your underwear?
And the third thing is those repealers are in there, so you have something to talk about when we get to the floor.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right, members, I don't have anybody else on my... Representative Breinhardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'd be remiss in not speaking to this bill, since I have a Minsk U institution in my community and a two-year institution across the river, and I know what this bill will do in my community. It definitely is a job killer. We already have had major faculty cuts. We'll continue with additional faculty cuts, staff cuts, program cuts. We're delaying graduation for our students because we can't deliver the courses we promised to them when they've entered their programs. Graduate students and researchers will look elsewhere for jobs because the grants and supports won't be available for their work. The Biobusiness Alliance, the renewable energy work, the science and technology commitments we've made as a state will be undermined because we won't have the research to support them. I think this bill is a disaster and very dangerous for our future as a state.
Thank you, Representative Breinhardt. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, first of all, Madam Chair, I'd like to see a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, Representative Nornis, your comment about Minsk U and closure, something I want to point out. We have a long history in Minnesota of wanting to ensure that we have access for all of the communities in this state. We've spent a lot of time making sure that we had tuitions at a reasonable level historically, although they're not there, where students, when I say historically, would pay one-third of the cost of instruction. They're way above that today, and the state would cover the other two-thirds because we thought that was a valid investment. But financial access was important. But then there was also geographic access. And I guess my comment is to the chair, but I would like to ask, because he's more familiar than I am with this part of the state, but when Rainy River was referenced, Representative Rukavina, what's the distance between Rainy River and the next available higher education institution?
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, I think it is 110 miles to Virginia, about 120 miles to Hibbing, and about 180 miles to Bemidji, maybe a little less.
Okay,
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, the point I want to make when there was reference earlier with Representative Nornis commenting about closure, that geographic access is vitally important in a state the size of Minnesota. And if we saw some of those smaller institutions in places like Rainy River, and I could identify at least a couple of others, then you're cutting off any opportunities for those communities to have educational opportunities on the post-secondary level readily available. And I don't think that would be the right direction for the
state to go. Those institutions are important to those, I wouldn't say just communities, but those entire regions, with the answer that Representative Rukavina gave in terms of the distances to the next higher institution that would be available. So, Madam Chair, I'll stop there, other than just simply saying I also would reinforce the request for a no vote on this bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative Norna.
I'd just like to respond. In no way was I suggesting any closures. I agree with you, Representative Carlson. These colleges are very important. I think their intent was to have an opportunity to get an education close to home, to improve your education while still on the job. There's a lot of reasons that they're placed where they are. And so I think we're blessed in this state to have all of the variety of opportunities for students, and I in no way want to diminish that at all. So.
Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, just to bring, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair.
That's okay.
I was thinking of Rukavina as I was talking to you, Madam Chair.
Don't let that happen again.
That's in 2 years.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina and members, you know, you talk about fighting for targets, and Representative Rukavina,
I'm not here, Tori.
Oh, get out from underneath the table, Representative Rukavina. Representative Rukavina, you know, 2 years ago when we passed your budget, we told you you're leaving us a cliff. You put a bunch of one-time Obama bucks in there, and this is part of the net result that was left for the future legislature. And so I think to bring a little perspective to it, we need to remember what was warned and what was talked about 2 years ago, and how your budget and Representative Brainard talked about the layoffs and the cuts that have already were made, which was a part of your budget. But part of the cliff that is also in this situation is the one-time money that got used 2 years ago, and it does vanish. And the reality, the rubber meets the road here this year. And so people need to be reminded and be aware of that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Rukavina, briefly.
In response, Representative Westrum. You know, members, Representative Westrum and I like to tease each other. One time he said something about being short on the floor, and I said, "Hey, how do you know I'm not 6 feet tall?" And he said, "If you were, how come your voice is always coming from the floor?" So, you know, but Representative Westrum, what you said is absolutely not true. When we used that money, we told both the Minsky and the university system the majority of that money was used to buy down tuition the last 2 years, and what wasn't used for that was used in the Minsky system to buy out and offer an early retirement to some of the most senior members of faculty. And if I'm talking out of school here, all looking at the university, they used it to buy down tuition too, to try to stabilize things, and they used their money for one-time things for I see saving energy. I'm looking over there at one of the CFOs, saving energy, automatic light switches that went off in rooms, things like that. And then we tried, the Democrats, to raise $2 billion because we knew a $6 billion hole was coming, to at least fill in that $2 billion of stimulus money. That's all we wanted to do, to keep that even playing field. And we could not get by the governor. And you folks are going to find out how difficult it is to get by a governor, too, that's looking at your budget bills, and hopefully will do the same to you to make you move a little bit to compromise that former Governor Pawlenty did to us. So, Representative Westrum, that's really not true. We used that money wisely. We knew it was one-time money. We bought down the students' tuition and used the other money to try to stabilize, to get rid of high-paid employees, save energy, those types of things.
Okay, Representative Greiling, and then Representative Klauski, and then Kahn. Representative Greiling.
Madam Chair, I just have a quick... has a roll
to this
been
point?
Requested?
Yes, yeah. It has.
All right. Then take me off.
Okay, thank you. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I just, as a person who works in E-12, I just want to remind us, though, that when we say we are protecting education and protecting our future, that does include higher ed. When we talk to state economist Tom Stinson, he always says the best way to stimulate our economy is to invest in education. And when you talk to him and, you know, peel back what he says, he said, when we all heard him say this at our opening at the Humphrey Institute, that we actually, if we're in a bad financial crisis, the more we invest in education for older students, the quicker we can have the workers who are educated come out. And he always says, you know, early childhood people or E12 people who are looking at the early grades, you know, you might not want to hear this, but we need to look in hard times at the workers that are closest to the end of the pipeline, the students who are going to be workers who are closest to the end of the pipeline. So even though I'm glad that we're not cutting E12 any more than $26 million, I'm just very disheartened that we're not taking care of our oldest students, older students. It's bad for the economy as well.
Representative Kahn.
Well, I guess it ends up just being a second of what Representative Greiling just said. If we're concerned about the business climate, if we are concerned about the economy of the state, the very best thing we can do is increase the effort that we're putting into higher education, because that's where the payoff has always been in this state, and this bill is a great disappointment in that line.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Nornes, would you like to renew your motion?
I would like to do that. Just one correction or just clarification. When I mentioned those tuition rates, that included fees, so it's not just tuition, but tuition and fees. For those of you who were concerned about that, I would like to renew my motion that House File 1101 pass and be referred to the General Register.
Thank you. And roll call having been requested, Mr. Smith will take the roll.
Representative Holberg.
Yes.
Representative Downey.
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Abler. Representative Bruce Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Sarah Anderson.
Yep.
Representative Beard.
Aye.
Representative Breinert.
No.
Representative Biskins.
Aye.
Representative Champion.
No.
Representative Davids.
Yes.
Representative Eakin.
No.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Hackbarth.
Aye.
Representative Hamilton. Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative House.
Yes.
Representative Huntley. Representative Kahn.
No.
Representative Kiffmeyer. Representative Lanning. Representative Lincheski.
No.
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Representative Nornes.
Yes.
Representative Pulowski.
No.
Representative Rukavina.
No.
Representative Slawick. Representative Smith.
Yes.
Representative Wagenius.
No.
Representative Westrom.
Yes.
Keep losing. No, I'm not sure if I got them all, but 16 to 11.
The Nornes motion prevails on a 16 to 11 vote. The bill passes and is recommended to be referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Nornes. The next item on the agenda will be House File 1010, Representative McNamara. Well,
thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 1010 to pass and be referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Representative McNamara, if you'll explain your bill to the committee.
Madam Chair, we do meet the target. Like one of the previous testifiers, we have $1,000 left on the bottom line. It does maintain, there's no cuts to fire protection in the DNR. It maintains treaty payments with the Native American tribes, which are part of the general fund. There's no cuts to either of those. There's some reprioritization in the LCCMR, which is part of the bill. The chamber has testified in favor of at least one of the provisions in the bill. I don't know what Target thinks. Isaac Walton League, if I remember right, was opposed to one provision, and I'm not sure. I think the Farm Bureau supports one of Representative Drazkowski's provisions. With that, I can stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. Questions or discussion to the bill? I know we have one amendment, but I thought maybe we'd have discussion and questions for the author first and then get to Representative Anderson's amendment. Representative Nornes.
I think in the bill there's some reduction to the DNR. Am I correct?
There are significant reductions to the DNR,
okay.
Representative Nornes.
I just wondered, what is there a flat percentage of what that would be, or is it too complicated?
No,
the McNamara.
Representative Nornes, I can run through the general fund reductions to the DNR. I believe were 14.5% to DNR, if I remember correctly. I'm looking. Representative Nornes, Mr. Reynolds, do you have this sheet with the percent? I seem to misplace this. Oh, here it is, right here. The reductions to Pollution Control Agency are 64% of their general fund budget. That's about 2.3% of their total budget. Natural Resources reduction was 14.5% of their general fund budget, and I may have to let Mr. Reinholz know what that is a total reduction of their budget. Conservation Corps is reduced 50%. Metro Parks is a 20% reduction. These, again, are general fund reductions. Many of these have other dedicated funds. Conservation Corps has about $1 million that was not cut at all. Metro Parks, our general fund reduction was 20%, about half the governor's 40% reduction. Minnesota Zoo is a 10% reduction with all their different funding that was going to affect them not very substantially, I think would be. Does that help, Representative Nornes?
Representative Nornes?
He said yes, Mr. Chair.
Any other discussion or questions to the bill? Representative Wagenius.
Well, I would just like to be on the list for after we do the amendment.
With that, Representative Anderson, to your amendment, the A-17, I believe.
Mr. Chair, I move the A-17 amendment.
Representative Anderson has moved the A-17 amendment. Representative Anderson, if you wanted to offer a brief description, and we can answer questions and have discussion.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We heard this issue in the Environment Finance Committee, and what has happened is in 2006, the law had a cap on group rate permits that lake associations do for treating for aquatic plants on their lakeshore. And I'm just putting it back to that 2006 level. It will help the DNR avoid costs of having to go through the rulesmaking process again, as well as to save costs in the inspection process for them as well. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative McNamara, to the amendment.
Mr. Chair, this goes back to, as Representative Anderson said, 2006, and it is, if I'm not mistaken, it is the way DNR is currently doing it right now. I believe is the truth, that this is currently the way DNR is acting under their current situation. So when you compare this to the way they are currently, this is what they are doing currently. Current law would have allowed them to expand and not have any cap at all. Representative Anderson is capping the amount on that. This will encourage groups along lakes to work together instead of doing it individually or going out and doing it on their own when they don't need a permit to use these chemicals. So from a sound environment standpoint, you would like this, but I know we're concentrating on the fiscal impact here.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chair, representing McNamara, concentrating on the fiscal, what we have is a situation where the general fund has been subsidizing people who have the fortunate enough to have homes or cabins on a lake. And the general fund, all of us, all of our taxpayers, even though they don't have a lake place, have been paying essentially the permit fees for people who have lake right. places and would like a permit to take away some of their aquatic vegetation. So we said, that's not fair. Let's have everybody who is has this Lake Place and wants something from the government, pay for it themselves. And so that's what we did. By going backwards, what you're doing are two things. Going back to having people who don't have the advantage of having a Lake Place pay for those who do. And the second thing, the irony in this, is it actually subsidizes the most to the people who are the wealthiest. So here we go again, another gift for the well-to-do, because if you're in a small lake and you have 10 people, you pay 10% of this flat rate. If you are in Lake Minnetonka and there are 700 people, you pay a tiny amount. So a cap designed this way is a favor for the well-to-do. I think it's totally unfair, and I would ask members to oppose it and to come up with something more fair.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, under current law, we heard in committee testimony of where one group around the lake could conceivably have to pay $9,000 for their permit.
Right.
We did not get any testimony from DNR that would show any way that costs incurred would be anywhere near $9,000. So I don't know if you can justify, without putting Representative Anderson's bill or something in place, it would not be reasonable to assume that it would cost $9,000 for what they were asking for.
Representative Anderson, to that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius, without having this cap in place, what we're actually going to do is place more of a burden on the taxpayers that don't live on our own lakes, because what will happen in essence is these individuals will no longer be part of a lake association and have one treatment done of their lake. Instead, it will be every man for himself, and they'll do individual treatments. And every time they do an individual treatment, the DNR will be required to come out and inspect that lake, and they will incur even more costs to their program, in addition to the fact that the lake will become overtreated, which I think is what we want to avoid here. We want to protect our resources, be good stewards of it, and we are actually incentivizing people to be poor stewards of our water that we have within our state. So I think this is important not only for saving the other individuals that don't live on lake property, but also protecting our waters and doing something that makes sense.
Representative Carlson, you were on the list. Was that to the bill, or did you want to speak to the amendment? Okay. Representative Biskins. Representative Wagenius, to the amendment.
To the amendment. The statute reads that the DNR cannot collect more from an individual than it is costing the state. So that, I think it's a spurious argument, and I would ask people to vote no.
Members, we have the A17 amendment before us. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign?
No.
Amendment passes. Further discussion to the bill. Representative Wagenius.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will speak very briefly to the bill, but so I don't forget, I will start by asking for a roll call.
Roll call having been requested.
And Representative McNamara, I was trying to think if in the time I had been in the legislature, or anybody for that matter who's serving here now, had ever seen a worse bill with the name environment in it and omnibus funding. And I don't think there has been one. So I'm just going to go over a couple of things that people should be aware of when they're voting. There was testimony from the environmental community, among others, that this bill would cause irreparable damage to the state's natural resources programs, and that means to the state's natural resources. And it appears that, not appears, and it's waters that are targeted for some of the biggest cuts. This bill also contains some commerce clause language. And so $18 million from a variety of Department of Commerce accounts funds are shifted, and they pay for things like fraud investigation. So I think it's safe to say that Minnesota is now open for the business of fraud. That's the expectation, that we will have more fraud in Minnesota that goes unchecked because there's nobody checking up on those who commit the fraud. One of the things that happened in this legislature at the beginning is we passed House File 1, and that was to say have a goal of speeding up permits. Well, that's an interesting goal when you take away the folks who write the permits and their money for working on permits. So this bill does the exact opposite and slows down the permitting process. And I'll just give you one example that will affect folks across the state. DNR will have to lay off half of its hydrologists. And what do hydrologists do if they're going into a rural committee, if somebody wants a center point pivot for irrigation? Hydrologist has to work on that. Half of them are going to be there. If somebody is in the metro area living on White Bear Lake and the water is going down dramatically and they're trying to figure out what's going on, that's a hydrologist. So that's what we're doing with those kinds of cuts. DNR expects that between 14 and 26 state parks will be mothballed. We know that a lot of the cuts means that the money going to local governments, and there are a lot of pass-throughs in these bills, won't be there. So that's gone. So the programs will either mean higher property taxes, it's again one of those higher property taxes things, or the programs will just disappear. One of the most subtle things in this bill, but very clear, is that the new money that citizens voted for, that 3/8 money, is being used, and the lottery money, which are both constitutionally dedicated, are being used to backfill the big holes in the state budgets. So we're breaking the trust with the Minnesotans who voted for that, and we will have a lot more conversations about that, I'm sure. But with that quick summary, I would ask members to vote no on this bill.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, the section in the bill that deals with the recommendations of LCCMR, are those the recommendations of LCCMR or not? And if not, why not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, of the original LCCMR recommendations from the committee, we have changed, I want to say, about 16. That number's gone up now. Probably just a little bit under 20% of the original LCCMR recommendations were changed. But I will remind members that the LCCMR did take a vote this year, the new LCCMR, to delete a number of the projects, but then I think they would have liked to have probably reconsidered that vote. They never did do that, so I don't know if you'd be safe to say of the deleted projects, they did take a vote to delete 22 of their original projects. Then in a later meeting, some of the members said, you know, maybe we shouldn't have really deleted those. Let's not necessarily count what we really did, but they did delete 22 projects of their original recommendation. But this bill includes a number of projects, I think maybe as many as 27 different changes or deletions from their recommendations. They amount to about, I would say, 20% of the LCCMR recommendations from the recommendations from the group from 2010.
Well,
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, I maybe just a quick little background. LCCMR, for those of you that are not familiar with it, is made up of both citizens and legislatures. There are seven legislators. There are 17 members, and they worked over the past biennium and that's the way it traditionally works to make recommendations for the next legislative session. And those recommendations were passed unanimously. There wasn't a dissenting vote. And it's my understanding then that after the election and with a new makeup of the LCCMR, that you, Representative McNamara, then wanted to go back and redo parts of the bill that had been recommended unanimously. And I think an important thing that people should know is that LCCMR, the last biennium, was very much a committee made up of both Pawlenty appointees, Republican representatives were appointed under the guidelines, as well as DFL. So it was very much a bipartisan group. In fact, I don't know the party affiliation of everyone on the committee because that wasn't relevant, other than I know they were a large number of them were appointed by Governor Pawlenty. Some of since because of the debate have identified themselves, at least one in the paper had identified himself as a Republican. I had no idea what his politics had been until it was in the paper. But that group worked very hard to arrive at a consensus in those recommendations. And whatever changes are taking place, it's my understanding, you can correct me if I'm wrong, then Representative McNamara, those recommendations were not endorsed by the rules requiring a 12-vote endorsement for those changes. The LCCMR members, as currently constituted, did not endorse the changes or what's before us. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson,
McNamara,
you're correct that the old LCCMR's recommendation to the new legislature are not in here. The LCCMR makes recommendations to the legislature that go to the House Environment Committee. The old LCCMR was made up of appointees from the previous leaders in the House and the Senate. They made recommendations to the legislature. They were brought forward to us in 2011. I immediately went to Ms. Thornton, the executive director, when I was appointed by the speaker to be chair of the Environment Committee, and that it was an automatic appointment to LCCMR, to let her know that I think it's appropriate that, you know, I think we need to discuss the previous group's recommendations because this legislature is going to want to have input. They're not going to accept what the previous group thought we should do. So I went and met a number of times with the LCCMR folks to discuss in their committee and get the input of the citizens rather than just come to the House committee, which had been done the previous times when power changed in the legislature by two different previous, if I'm not mistaken, I think one Democrat, one Republican, did it in committee instead of where I tried to do it within LCCMR with the new group, which I thought was appropriate. The citizens knew of our efforts and our thoughts and our review of the projects. A number of projects didn't meet what we see as criteria today for what the money should be spent on. We reprioritized and are spending the money on things like chronic wasting disease. Unfortunately, we found a wild deer with chronic wasting disease near Pine Island. I believe that's a priority that we should deal with as an emerging issue. We're spending somewhere north of $5 million on aquatic invasive species. Representative Carlson, we've got zebra mussel in Lake Minnetonka, Gull Lake, Lake Ossawinamakee. We need to deal with those issues immediately. We need to deal with those. There's projects that we deleted because we felt these issues were a higher priority. Now, I understand if you support the other projects and think they're more than important than the projects we put in, I'd recommend you offer an amendment to delete those other and go back to the previous bill. I mean, that was just a question of priorities. Where do you want to spend your money? I don't want zebra mussel going around any more lakes than we have to have it.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, my questions in backgrounding surfaced on the process. My question then, Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, I asked you if the new LCCMR, as constituted then after the election, but I was trying to point out that the old LCCMR was very much a mixture of Democrats and Republicans and probably a very even mixture, but party politics never entered in, members. That is important to remember. But what my point was then, did the new LCCMR, under the LCCMR rules, endorse what's before us today? And I'm not going to go back and pick at the various projects that are in. I'm just asking the process question, is what's in your bill endorsed by the current, the new LCCMR?
The new LCCMR decided to not take a vote.
So the answer to the question, Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, then is that it's not, if they decided not to take a vote, it's not endorsed then.
Representative McNamara.
There is no endorsement.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I think they decided they would rather just stick with their original proposal. That I'm speaking now for the seven citizens, because at the last meeting, I don't know that the legislature really was. We were most interested in what the citizens had to say, and I'm trying to not speak for them when I'm not exactly sure what their thoughts were, but I think it's safe to say that the citizens supported deleting 22 of the projects. I believe it was on February 28th. And then on our March 14th meeting, we met each Monday night for three or four Mondays in a row. They decided that this was moving too fast for them. They wanted to review the process and take a number of weeks and months to meet over this. I repeated over and over what our timeline was. They decided rather than work within the timeline we had, that they would just step back and not deal with it, understanding that we were going to be moving forward. And I got to be honest, I brought this forward in January to begin the process. So that's why we're here today, Representative Carlson.
And
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I raised the question, I'm focusing on the process and not the projects. My concern is that LCCMR not be politicized. And the point that I made when those recommendations were made, and there was give and take, things that I might have done differently, for disclosure, was on the old LCCMR. There might have been some things that I would have done differently, but we arrived at a consensus, and that consensus was adopted by LCCMR unanimously. And my concern with what's happening now is that there is the risk that LCCMR will become politicized. And that's why I was focusing on process and whether what's in the bill was endorsed by even the new LCCMR after it was reconstituted. And it apparently is not. And I just want committee members to be aware of what the process had been to get us to this point, and that those that the earlier LCCMR was bipartisan, a very even mix. It did not reflect the makeup of the legislature. At that point in time, we had 87 seats. But the rules, the way LCCMR is put together on the legislative side, it's three Democrats and two Republicans. And then when you bring in the Pawlenty appointments, it may, in fact, even have tipped it the other way. I don't know that to be a fact because, as I say, party identification was never a part of the LCCMR discussions. People were there with an interest in a variety of environmental issues, and that's what I mean where we arrived at a consensus. And I just wanted people to have that background as this bill moves forward, because I hope that we do not end up politicizing LCCMR. It's a group that has, in my view, worked very hard. They've traveled the state. They've looked at the projects. The people involved were very much involved. Every single LCCMR member, I think, both sides of the aisle on the legislative side, and I think the citizens, I can say as well, were totally engaged and put a lot of time and effort in putting those recommendations together. And there was give and take, as I pointed out earlier. But, Mr. Chairman, I'll stop on that question. I do have my usual question, and that is, Representative McNamara, are there any tails in the bill, any obligations into future biennia?
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Reinhold.
Mr. Reinholds.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the tails, if you're talking about, has it increased from fiscal year to 12, the spending? You can see on the summary page that the spending in the House, the net general fund is 228,066 for 12-13, and for 14-15, the net is 258,118. The vast majority of that is related to a prior obligation from the House bill from last year, in which in fiscal year 2015, there will be a repayment of partial repayment of funds borrowed from the closed landfill program, and the remainder of that is made up by there were funds transferred to the general fund in 12-13 that will not be transferred in 14-15. The actual spending is decreased between 12-13 and 14-15 for the agencies. The number for in the environment area for 12-13 is 185,321. In 14-15, it's 185,260. So the actual spending is down slightly.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative McNamara, and Mr. Reinhold.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative McNamara, a couple of questions. Number one, are there any new fees created in this bill?
Representative McNamara.
Representative Biskins, there are not.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative McNamara, are there any fee increases in this bill?
Representative McNamara.
Representative Biskins, I actually thought that was your first question. No.
Representative Biskins.
Then, Mr. Chairman and Representative McNamara, if the answer to my first question is different than the answer to my second question, which you thought was my first question, then I would like you to amend it. Otherwise, I'll take the answers to both questions as being no.
Representative McNamara.
There's no new or increased fees in the bill.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Reinholds, please don't take this as a criticism. Your spreadsheet is very detailed, and I really do appreciate it. But one of the things that we see, and we've got two other committees that have spreadsheets here, is we have the amount spent in 10 and 11, and that is missing from this spreadsheet. And if you are going to create an amended spreadsheet for the House floor, I would appreciate that information. The final question that I have for Representative McNamara, and I see you've done the necessary work in this budget crisis to reduce your general fund budget, but what about all funds? I'm looking at this spreadsheet, and I'm noticing that money comes in from probably at least four, maybe five different funds. The total spending from last biennium to this biennium, when all funds are included, is that staying constant? Is that actually going down in real dollars, or is it in fact going up in real dollars?
Representative McNamara.
Representative Biskins, I'm going to have Mr. Reinholds. I know a couple, generally speaking, but I'll let him get the numbers right.
Thank you. Mr. Reinholds.
Mr. Chairman, members, this budget is a very complicated budget. That's why the spreadsheet is long. There are a large number of funds. There are also two articles. I can summarize for you at the totals. The forecast base spending for this budget for all the agencies for 12 and 13 was $1,592 million. The spending within this House recommendation is $1,565,000,000, which is a reduction of $26.9 million between the base budget and the House recommendations for all funds. That does not include the LCMR funds. The LCMR funds are one-time only always, but they were similar in the previous biennium. So I would say it's a reduction in total fund spending.
Representative Biskins. Representative Wagenius. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Speaking of Representative Wagenius, I just have to, since rep for the Mr. Chair, her first name is Jean, but so it's Jean, but in the name of her last name, it's Wagenius, not Wagenius.
Thank you, Representative Greiling.
I know you're new, so you're welcome. I always correct Greiling if someone says Greiling. Now I have to take care of my neighbors, too. I just wanted to give a comment, and it's for Representative McNamara. I have never, and it's along the lines of what Representative Carlson was talking about, I have never had comments from my constituents, I don't think ever, on the LCCMR bills and proposals, and this year I've had a lot, and it is because of the politicizing of the recommendations. I just checked with Representative Wagenius to my right, and she said when she became the chair after Republican regime, she didn't change a single recommendation because they are good people on there and they're not political. So I think if we're going to get in the habit of every time we change parties, hopefully again soon one of these days from my perspective, of changing what the previous party has done, then we are failing in the makeup and the charge to the LCCMR because they should not be political. We want them to be the kind of people that are making recommendations that we can all support no matter what changes there are, and if we change back and forth very often, they would become meaningless because they wouldn't have any time at all with our two-year terms to make recommendations and then even have them stand. If I were ever being asked to be on it, and I wouldn't be because that's not my specialty, but if I were, or if I were recommending any of my constituents to be on, I would tell them not to bother if I thought we were going to do this every time we changed parties, change the recommendation. So that just give you that feedback.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. it's been good criticism, and I respect people's opinions. What it's important for people to know, I didn't politicize the LCCMR to start. It was politicized by the previous majority in the Minnesota House, unfortunately. I spoke to that at length in committee. You're free to hear that more, and if you want to ask more questions, I'm free to answer them. But I will tell folks, if you're interested in how it got politicized, I would suggest you talk to both of the previous speakers, Speaker Steve Swigum and Speaker Margaret Anderson Kelleher, and ask about their legislative appointments to the LCCMR.
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, I'll defer to my neighbor to the right, Representative Wagenius.
Actually, Representative Kahn slipped in before your neighbor to the right. Representative Kahn.
No, I didn't.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm continuing on this same subject. I have not been on the LCCMR, although I was with the group of people that set up the rules for it. I was on the previous preceding LCMR several times and, in fact, chaired it at one time. And I just want to say that I have never seen raping and ravishing of the recommendations as is presented in this bill. And one of the things that I think people don't quite understand who haven't been on it isn't like an ordinary legislative committee. It does a tremendous amount of work in terms of site visits, in terms of listening, sorting. There's a huge amount of work. First, the people who submit projects to it. Then there are several rounds of going through the projects and sorting them out. And then the final thing is, then there's language in the there's language in the bill, and this was something that I had put in, you know, years ago. There's an incredibly effective peer review process, which looking at any process that has anything to do with research in it, and the amount of, since it's really important not to have conflicts with that, a lot of people from outside the state get to do it. A lot of faculty from various places get to do it, and this is actually kind of getting free work from the. I mean, I've been on peer review committees for the National Science Foundation, National Institute of Health, and it's an enormous amount of work that you do in order to kind of understand these things and make serious recommendations on them. And I think with this kind of treatment, I can hardly see anyone agreeing to do this to do this in the future. Let me point out, I know there are many more if you were to go through the history, and I just picked out two that I remembered. Some, you know, this ripping, saying that research is not important, we're just going to deal with existing problems. One of the most successful programs that we have in Minnesota government, it's now called MinGeo, and it's very much supported by your local units of government. I was glad to see there were no cuts made in it this time, because the last time when there were proposed cuts, we had there was outrage from all the many local units of government who said that they would have to replace this kind of work without the ability to do it. That was originally started by, I think, a grant that was under $100,000 to one person at the university. This is actually before I was even in the legislature, and it gradually proceeded from then. So the idea to, and that first, and this is now a nationally recognized program, and this idea to say that there was really good information we could get by looking at the computerization of geographic information and making it available to everybody was a very powerful tool, and it gradually became a much bigger program. There was another program that we had on the aeromagnetic surveying of minerals that went over multiple numbers of years. Again, this has been something that's been used by industry. It's been used again by many people to develop, to look at where to do geographic exploration. All these kinds of, and I can't tell you what the effects of these, of the research projects that were eliminated in here, but it was the one place in the state where we, the one place in state government where we had the ability to really look ahead into the future without any commitment, without any tails, and it has just been really destroyed in this bill. Not just the fact that maybe only 20% of the projects were out, but because of that, people will, the most qualified people, I think, will not be willing to go through the enormous effort, the enormous multiple committee hearings and so forth to get their projects through if this is likely to happen at the end. And there possibly have been little bits of tinkering when times change, but nothing like this has ever occurred in the past. And it's really an outrageous way to treat the people involved in this process, not only the people who made the decisions, but the people involved in every part of it, from the first people submitting projects, people doing peer review, and so forth. And I just think it's a disgrace.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, I know you feel strongly about this, but your choice of words could be construed to be very offensive to victims of sexual assault if comparing the actions of the LCCMR and so.
Well, I think it's
and I know
general.
You're sensitive to that issue as well, but...
Well, Representative Holberg, it's a general word. Kahn. If you go back and look back to its Latin Greco definitions, you'll discover it can be used for acts other than the physical act, too.
And I understand that,
Holberg.
But for some people, that word has a lot of meaning that you can't separate.
Members, just a reminder, I believe we are trying to adjourn and conclude our business by about 4 o'clock to respect members' interest in attending the Ed Burdick service. But Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. as usual, sometimes I miss whatever was going on that Representative Holberg and Representative Kahn were talking about. I was listening to other things, so I apologize if I missed something there. But what I did what I did get out of Representative Kahn had to say was the importance of peer review. And I wanted to let folks know, unfortunately, one of the projects I recommended we delete, unfortunately, had negative peer review. I have no idea why members were not aware of it. When I did a little research, I found out, and this is interesting, it's a project that deals with Emerald Ash Borer. So who would think that McNamara would want to cut something to do with Emerald Ash Borer? Well, in my due diligence that I let LCCMR staff know that I thought was important to do, I went in and looked at a project that was $334,000. The peer review, I have no idea why other members didn't ever look at it, or maybe they didn't get it, whatever, was negative. It talked about how the project didn't really have the right goals. It had been done a number of times throughout the country and Canada already, so it didn't seem like it should be funded. So Representative Kahn, you make a good point, and unfortunately, for whatever reason, I wasn't part of the last LCCMR, but I did my work when I got appointed to the committee and knew I had to bring the project forward. So I'm willing, if anybody wants to question one of the projects I recommended be deleted, I can clearly tell you why it was deleted. And if you think it should be reinstated, I certainly am open to that.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, you made the statement, and I think I'm correct in repeating it this way, that the LCCMR project process had been politicized before you got there. I think there is no evidence that that happened. In fact, I think the evidence is to the contrary. And let me tell members that when we came into the majority more than 4 years ago, it would have been the tradition as chair of the Environment Finance Committee for me to carry the LCCMR bill. That was the tradition. But I talked to Speaker Kelleher and I said, Representative Kathy Tingelstad has done more of the work than I have done. I wasn't on the committee before. She was on the committee. She had done the work. Couldn't she carry the bill? And Representative Kelleher said, yes, that would be very appropriate. So we asked together, I don't know which one of us did it first, for Representative Tingelstad to carry the bill, which she did, and she did a great job with it. If you call that being politicized, I just can't even understand why you would say that.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to respond to this talk about being politicized or not. Members, anytime you get a group of human beings together, it's going to be politicized. I don't care if you're LCCMR or trying to run a church or a synagogue or any nonprofit organization. When you get a group of people together, they're going to have different perspectives, different philosophies, and it's going to be political within that organization. Now, I would hope that LCCMR doesn't become partisan like we are. I would hope that's the case. But being partisan is one thing. Being political or politicized is another. Mm-hmm. And so let's make that kind of distinction.
That's correct.
Representative McNamara, did LCCMR in the past provide any real funding to dealing with the aquatic invasive species problem?
Representative McNamara.
Representative Lanning, there may have been some studies or some research. I'm trying to remember. Representative Wagenius might be able to answer that. Unfortunately, I don't think the previous group saw the need as an emerging issue like I believe it is today.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, that's my point. That is a very serious problem facing this state. Water is the greatest resource we have, natural resource we have in Minnesota. And we've got bodies of water all over the state that are threatened. They're already invaded by aquatic invasive species. And for Representative McNamara, thank you for what you've done in this bill to finally address this in a more serious way than we've done to this point.
All right, Representative Wagenius, briefly to this point, and then we're going to move on.
Briefly to this point, I would agree about the politics and the partisanship. But with regard to invasive species, LCCMR has done requests for proposals each time I've been there on invasive species. No question about it. Unfortunately, we have not gotten as many responses from the research community as I would have expected us to get. So the door was open, but not as many people walk through that door on doing basic research. Now, there's been some great work done on carp and some other things, but as I think the LCCMR was actually open to doing more than people asked for. Now, in terms of the kind of work that is in this bill, we actually did general fund money for this exact same kind of work in the past couple of bienniums. So there has been general fund money for the kind of invasive species work that Representative McNamara is proposing.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Representative House.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I've been quiet on this issue for a long time because this I thought I should be patient and keep my mouth shut, but I believe it's gone on a little too far. And Rukavina isn't here to blow up, so I guess I have to do it for him. But I've spent 2 years on LCCMR when we were in the majority. I spent the last 2 years with the Democrats. And I'm getting a little tired of it being called partisan, very tired. And I'm not going to stand for it anymore. So Representative Rukavina and I probably voted no against the wishes of the committee of LCCMR more than anybody else. And the friend that sat next to me was from my county. He was appointed by Governor Pawlenty, but he was a Republican. I think there were more Republicans when he added the citizens and the four Republican legislators that were on there. But just because of that, I'm going to vote no on this bill because I'm tired of being accused of being on a committee that was partisan. And maybe that's why I wasn't put on that committee this session, because they wanted it to be a different kind of committee. So I've said my piece and all.
Thank you, Representative House. Is there anybody yet that has any other burning issues they'd like to discuss about the financial situation of this bill?
Not this bill.
That would be a good choice.
I have other burning issues.
I'm sure you do, and we don't want to hear about them today.
Madam Chair, just
Representative Carlson.
When you come to the vote, because you weren't in the chair, our side of the aisle did ask for a roll call.
And I am aware of that. Thank you, Representative Carlson. Last chance.
Did ask for a roll call.
And I am aware of that. Thank you, Representative Carlson. Last chance. Representative McNamara, would you like to renew your motion?
Most certainly. I'd like to renew my motion for House File 1010 to be passed and onto the General Register.
As amended, I'm guessing.
As amended.
Thank you. Mr. Smith will take the roll.
Representative Holberg.
Yes.
Representative Downey.
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Abler. Representative Bruce Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Sarah Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Beard.
Aye.
Representative Breinert. Representative Biskins.
Aye.
Representative Champion.
No.
Representative Davids.
Yes.
Representative Eakin.
No.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Hackbarth.
Aye.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Howes.
No.
Representative Huntley. Representative Kahn.
No.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Aye.
Representative Lanning.
Yes.
Representative Lincheski.
No.
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Representative Nornes.
Yes.
Representative Pulowski.
No.
Representative Rukavina. Representative Slawick. Representative Smith.
Yes.
Representative Wagenius.
No.
Representative Westrum.
Yes.
Representative Breinert.
No.
I think I might be wrong this time. One down. I'm not sure.
Members, while we're waiting for the totals to be added up, we will not be meeting tomorrow or Saturday. Watch for notice for a meeting on Monday. By a vote of 17 to 11, the McNamara motion prevails. The bill is passed as amended and referred to the General Register. Representative Westrom.
Did you say we're meeting Monday or watch for a notice on Monday?
We will very likely be meeting on Monday sometime midday. I believe the floor session, I believe, is at noon. And as I understand right now, there'll be a, as I understand right now, there will be some time on the floor and then a break for Ways and Means to meet and then back on the floor. But as you know, things change around here, too. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, do you have any idea what the agenda might be?
At this point, it looks like we'll be doing the jobs and the ag bills. But watch for a notice.
Okay, thank
you. Any additional questions? If not, the meeting's adjourned.